What a day. Man, that escort mission kind of went off the rails, huh?
Sure did.
Can't believe I didn't realize that was a Ferengi in the park.
Hey, so you think maybe fun idea we could just keep it between us?
For sure. We're in a circle of trust. This is a shuttle of silence.
So the Ferengi's right there, and I'm like, Mariner, we can't trust this guy. He's a Ferengi. And then she says, get this. She says, oh no, that's a Bolian. Bolian.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, ejecting all the ship's children into outer space.
And we are here this week to talk about the second episode of Lower Decks, Envoys.
Yeah, Cam, again, we're 2 weeks into it. They're still going with kind of that hangout factor that I'm digging. So my hot take is, the show is having fun with the universe, and I'm having fun watching it. I especially like, say, the Rutherford storyline, where I wish they actually did like a Data episode from TNG where he goes and joins every single department. So that's kind of a highlight for me. But what's your initial take on the show, this episode too?
Episode two, I thought, was solid. I think the storytelling was better than episode one a little bit, just because it didn't have to introduce so much. But I felt like it wasn't quite as funny as the first episode.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned a few of our favorite funny moments in episode one. I did not have as many notes there. They're one or two that I liked. But like I said, it's still the vibe that I'm digging. The other thing is, like, you said storytelling-wise, I noticed this one was considerably less fast pace, as we had observed last week. I like when they take their time with a show, that's where you can kind of sink in with the characters a little bit more. I think we've kind of complained about the Discovery pacing a few times. I like it at this pace. The only thing that I'll say, when I'm watching Mariner in the shuttle, like, just going crazy with her noodles and broth and then getting in a fight with a Klingon, I'm just wondering if the show can take it down just one notch with the characters. Like I know what they're trying to do with Boimler and Mariner, but I really like more of kind of the vibes we're getting from, say, Tendi and Rutherford. Like, that's more of kind of the energy levels that I'm feeling myself.
Well, less of the, like, really frantic, like, physical comedy type stuff, too.
Yeah, it's the franticness of it all that I'm just kind of like, okay, guys, like, we get it. You're wacky kids, but it's episode two. They're still trying to kind of, like, find the vibe of the show. So it's all good at this point.
I know what you mean, though. Like, that's the sort of comedy in animation that doesn't grab me as much. I mean, I guess some people probably really enjoy it. But yeah, you are right. When characters are just bouncing around like crazy, that's where I'm kind of like, okay. Like, yeah. not really my vibe.
But, I don't know. I was trying to think of if there's like a comparable episode in Star Trek to this one. Like, I'm not saying it in tone or necessarily, you know, story, but like... It could be either or. Is there anything that kind of jumped out to you, whether like maybe the tone struck you similar to another Star Trek episode, or maybe just the story that we followed this week?
I'm racking my brain here. And are we talking about the A story or the B story? Either or?
Either one. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like in terms of the Rutherford stuff, there has to be a TNG episode where Data goes around and talks to various people about something or other. There must be an episode like that, right?
Well, what about Data's Day, where he's helping O'Brien and Keiko get married, right?
Yeah, like when he's going around talking to different characters about, like, you know, love or something like that, and you're getting different perspectives from different, you know, icons on the show, that sort of ties into what Rutherford's going through, where we're getting to learn a little bit about each of the bridge crew through his experiences.
I'm curious about this, like, his bosses, like, every time he says, I'm going to transfer... You get this angry glower, and then they both say, yeah, that's great. Glad to hear it. And everybody's like, they seem like very supportive bosses. Again, we had that discussion last week about whether or not their intimidating demeanor is a representative of what's going on in these junior officers' minds, or if it is actually like how they are as characters.
Well, Starfleet seems to be a very supportive organization in a lot of ways for advancement, so it doesn't surprise me that they would be like, you need to find the best job for you.
Yeah, yeah. They are supportive there. What was your favorite job that Rutherford tried to take on?
The medical bay was pretty amazing. Like with the med bay, yeah, with the doctor there, Dr. Tanna. That was pretty funny, I thought.
I like Dr. Tanna, like just like kind of the gruff, grumpy vibe. She gives me kind of McCoy sort of signals as well. And the bedside manner with the guy with the, what was it, dilithium burns? That was pretty.
I could relate to Rutherford's dilemma in that situation because I would be the worst person to be lending like bedside manner to people.
You would not be playing airplane with their jello that they need to consume or anything like that?
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah. A story though, you know, I'm curious about this because I threw that question to you about what kind of Star Trek show did this remind you of. I think because it is such a crappy assignment, especially at the beginning where it's, you see Boimler at the con of the shuttle, just trying to make it get from point A to B, and he's just absolutely miserable. That is, I think, the definition of a crap assignment. This is what we're actually kind of looking forward to in the series, that we're having fun with that. It did give me a little bit of Tribble vibes because Kirk knew that it was a crappy assignment that he had there. Boimler, as much he was trying to boost it up, I think by then, when Mariner joins him, he knows it's a crappy assignment, and he can't really, you know, hide that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely the cut-up Klingon to be transporting around, huh?
General Karin?
Sounded like Karin, yeah.
Yeah, so I do love how he had the bolted-on patch a la General Chang. Is that what happens? Like, every single general has to have a missing eye in Star Trek?
I think that's a Klingon thing. You know, they're warriors, and they alluded, I think, to this character in the first episode, where Mariner said she got her batleth from a one-eyed, or like a Klingon with an eye patch.
Yeah, yeah. So they go way back. I want to talk to you about the Mariner character. I did mention that I thought she could just take it down a notch and all, but I honestly think at this point she is probably the most layered character. I do enjoy the fact that we're seeing somebody who has these kind of self-destructive tendencies, but she seems highly capable at everything that she does.
Very much so, and it's been interesting watching this contrast between Boimler, the book smart one, and her, who just has this experience, like she's been out in space for a long time. It's almost a little bit of what they should have tried to do with the Mayweather character on Enterprise, you know, a boomer who's been out in space for a long time, have someone who's very aware of their environment. But Mariner, you know, has that, and it's been interesting to see how she's always right. I'm curious if maybe we get some episodes where Boimler gets the upper hand in a situation or two, just because I think it might get old if that dynamic always results in Mariner being right. But in this episode, it was entertaining.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you fall for the twist with the with Mariner thinking they should follow a Ferengi into a dark cave?
I was too amused by the portrayal of the Ferengi.
Yeah, okay. I actually did love the portrayal of the Ferengi. Like, it sounded like the voice sounded like Lost, our Last Outpost era Quark. I kind of figure it's like, wait, is that Armin Shimerman like putting on an affectation or something?
It really did though remind me of, yeah, those Last Outpost Ferengi when they were trying to make them the big bads of TNG. And I mean, I was writing my notes, this Ferengi feels like Gollum.
Yes. And instead of a ring, we find out it's really a monocle that's is his greatest desire. Like, is this the first time we've seen a character in Star Trek wear a monocle?
The Klingons take those off when they put their eye patches on.
I follow you now, though. But I do like the idea that, you know, we have Boimler saying, like, it is kind of that racist history of Star Trek where it's like nothing's less trustworthy than a Ferengi. That's what Boimler is saying. You find out at the end, and the Ferengi is actually a pretty cut-up chap, you know, another one of Mariner's friends, and he's well-to-do based on that monocle that he's wearing by that final transmission. I did enjoy that that conclusion to the storyline, but the entire time I'm watching, I'm just like, yeah, Mariner's just trying to make Boimler feel better after he tossed off his comm badge and said he was going to go study on an asteroid.
I loved that they kind of had their cake and ate it too with the Ferengi in this episode, and that they got to do kind of the iconic scheming evil Ferengi that we have seen on TNG, you know, quite a few times, while also doing the Star Trek thing and the thing that you and I like, which is take the quote-unquote ugly alien species and give them dimension and make them not what you would expect, which they do in the end. So they got to kind of do both things at the same time. I thought that was a really fun concept.
Well, I just say it was, but then they kind of just recall a few minutes earlier, they had that autobage in which you have like this beautiful woman putting the moves on Boimler, and then it reveals her true face and she's trying to implant eggs inside of him. So Star Trek really does, like, ugly aliens in Star Trek are meant to be evil, which is not the best message, I'd say.
Although that just reminded me of that episode with Trip. Is it Unexpected?
Oh, where he gets pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was thinking. But I did like her running away, mentioning his nasty boy thoughts. That was one of the laughs for me in this episode.
Well, what do you think of kind of the A story of like going down to a planet and they just get to wander around from like strange location to strange location? I love that. We talked about it though. The animation factor here means that they don't have to worry about a budget. Like you can have these what would otherwise be extremely expensive set pieces going on in animation format.
You also couldn't really have the characters just walking across vast stretches of a planet into various, little, whatever they are, little communities, basically. It would just be very difficult to do on an actual episode of live action Star Trek. But the characters here got to hop around this planet. We got to experience various elements of it. And it's, again, really getting to utilize what animation can do. And I loved when we went to the little Andorian community.
Yeah, I did like seeing our first child Andorian in shapeshifter form ever since the finale of Star Trek Enterprise. It's been long awaited for us.
Although this did have that thing that, once again, a Boimler running right into a situation and making the like most drastic interpretation of events.
Okay. I'm going to go on this little mini rant. You've heard it from me before, but the authoritarian bent that we see on display within the Star Trek universe, in which Boimler announces, I'm with Starfleet. He's not on like a Starfleet like base or anything like that. Like they're going down to visit a Federation embassy there. So he's kind of taking control of the situation. Does he even have the authority to do this though? Because is Starfleet not only the explorers, but the paramilitary sort of defense organization, and they're also, you know, civilian police at the same time? Like these are the kinds of things that like it does irk me, just because it seems so kind of pro-authoritarian as it's been showcased through 50 plus years of Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much to interpret. That's just Boimler versus we've only seen him doing things like this. But that is something that we've seen a little bit in Star Trek, but this character takes it to the nth degree.
I would say we've seen a lot of it in Star Trek, where it's like they are the all-out authority that even civilians are supposed to bow down to. And I just wonder how that ages right now when we have like global discussions about the roles of, say, police officers right now, them overstepping their authority and having kind of institutionalized issues. Now, do I think that is the intent of the creators of the show as rah-rah pro-police? Absolutely not. But one of the things that we did forget to mention, or at least I wish I brought it up, though, have you been following a lot of the stories with animated shows? And a lot of people pointing out that all these racialized characters on the show are not, in fact, played by, you know, people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to Lower Decks' credit, you have a diverse cast and you have diverse characters. Like the people, like Rutherford, like he's being played by, you know, a person of color doing the voice acting as well. So it's just kind of like, I do appreciate that. I think the Discovery people were kind of ahead of the times. Cause I mean, the show is being made like 1 year plus ago as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a lot of the news has been surrounding The Simpsons especially. And The Simpsons probably should have wrapped it up a while back.
You know. You're not still getting guffaws out of it week to week like you used to?
No, I think that's just the issue of a lot of, you know, comedy shows, though. If you run long enough, at a certain point, you become outdated, and The Simpsons become outdated.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Lower Decks, as you said, they made a lot of smart and I think really good casting choices that have paid off. Like, the characters have distinct sounds. And that's really what matters in this scenario. Like, they've really got the best actors, what seem like, for the job. And I think they're doing a good job because all of them have a lot of personality.
What? Why is it then, just a little bit of a tangent, why is it that South Park, for example, doesn't seem to be outdated? Like, it just seems to be on top of things in a contemporary fashion. I remember like 10 or 12 years ago, they had the Man Bear Pig episode in which they're making fun of Al Gore and his crusade to bring attention to climate change. They did a follow-up episode to that about a year ago in which they totally acknowledged that, yes, Man Bear Pig is real. It's like the writers of that show, they are willing to acknowledge their mistakes. I wonder if a big part of it, though, is it's an auteur-driven series. It's been the same, you know, actors and writers for like the nearly 25 years that South Park's been on the air.
Yeah, that's probably it. I think there's a, maybe, I don't know, like South Park was always kind of the irreverent punk rock kind of choice you could make over The Simpsons, which became a little more institution. I mean, The Simpsons defined a certain generation of young viewers, including myself. And South Park was always kind of off to the side. They're a little bit edgier. And so I think the creators were allowed to, you know, pivot quicker on things just because they had so much control. As you said, the auteur oversight that The Simpsons didn't have. And it became, you know, a huge cash cow for Fox and I guess now Disney.
Did you ever see the two-parter in which is South Park just ridiculing the comedy of Family Guy?
No, I know of it. I mean, I remember there was memes going around about the manatees in a in like an aquarium, basically.
Yeah, it was also perhaps better known as the one where they said that they were going to feature Muhammad like as a cartoon, and they literally had to take remove the image from that show because of the network. And what I'm getting at though is there's a great moment in which Cartman meets Bart Simpson. And Bart Simpson's just like, yeah, I'm a real bad boy. And Cartman's like, well, what's the worst thing you've done? He's like, I stole a head off a statue once. Cartman was like, oh, yeah, well, I fed one of my classmates his dead parents, in a bowl of chili, which was one of the most horrific episodes of South Park, but it was a pretty good episode nonetheless. So you just kind of see, as you say, South Park's always been kind of the more punk rock sort of series. I don't see Lower Decks ever being the punk rock series, though. It has the opportunity to be super irreverent. I still wonder if they want to fall back on kind of the good heartedness of Star Trek, though.
I don't think you're ever going to be the punk rock animation show if you are based on a very valuable IP.
Yes. What is the most punk rock Star Trek series that's out there?
I love this question.
I've got one in mind. Can I go first, or do you want to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
I think it's got to be Deep Space Nine. I think you're literally the only show where it's like, yeah, it's Star Trek. Where do we trek? Nowhere. We're stationary. And it's like, that is just ultimately punk rock to me. And I think they're the ones that were first to really embrace serialization when other shows weren't. They really do have those kind of like gray characters. And sometimes it seems as if a lot of the follow-up shows were they come off as too much like tryhards, where Deep Space Nine always wanted to do like its own thing. You also had Iggy Pop come on as a guest star in one episode. Like, what can I say about that?
I mean, Deep Space Nine is I think that's the right pick because it did go out of its way to break a lot of rules, or at least change what the rules are a little bit to allow them to do new things with the franchise. And because they were kind of ignored, because Rick Berman's attention was distracted by the end of TNG in the movies and then Voyager, you know, they got to operate kind of in their own little corner the way that South Park was able to over on Comedy Central. So I think that's a really good answer. I would say, though, the most prog rock series is probably the animated series, the original animated series.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where it's just like, visually, they were just like, hey, man, whatever goes, anything the mind can come up with.
I regret my answer to you just now when I said, yeah, yeah. I should have said yes. The prog rock band from the UK. Yes. Roundabout, awesome song. YouTube it, guys, if you haven't checked it out already. But yeah, so for those that may not recall, but it would have been, you know, the Star Trek convention in Vegas, like beginning of August. Didn't happen, but I was thinking about some of my favorite memories, and I cornered Ira Stephen Bear after the last, you know, Rat Pack show, which featured a lot of lounge singing. If you want to talk about punk rock, Cam, Deep Space Nine, bringing back lounge singers, making them cool again. What can I say? But I was talking to Ira Stephen Bear, and, you know, at the point where you could be wondering if you're just like that neurotic fan that's bothering the guy, I was asking him a lot about Iggy Pop and that episode of Deep Space Nine that he gets started on. He lit up when I was asking him all about it. So that's how I knew I wasn't bugging him. But it was actually like a pretty cool thing to talk to him about for, I don't know, I probably got his attention for about like 6 or 7 minutes, which is actually a pretty long time at a convention.
Yeah, I would say so. It was quite a chat you two had.
And I've never spoken to him again. He doesn't return my phone calls.
I was thinking, though, you were referencing DS9 bringing lounge acts back. Were lounge acts like the punk rock of that era with like Frank Sinatra and the gang?
No, I think they were like the Rihanna of the era. Like they're very mainstream. They're the Taylor Swift of the time. It's like you could appreciate the talent. Everybody, you know, was listening to them. What would have been the punk rock of like the 1960s? Beatnik on bongo drums, is that it?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I guess punk rock tends to not be commercially successful, especially in its early days. So I guess the Beatniks, the fact that I can't name any, is maybe a sign that they were operating on the periphery of the music industry and have kind of never broke through the way that I would remember them for.
Because you would typically consider like Iggy and the Stooges to be the first like punk rock band, and I think their first album was released in 1969. So yeah, and then you've got like 10 years of like kind of punk rock. Like what was the first punk rock act to actually break big though? Like the thing is, the whole point is that they kind of toiled. Like they didn't break big for probably like another decade. I would probably say it was probably The Clash.
Right. That's the one that was jumping to my mind as well.
Yeah. With all that punk rock talk out of the way, Cam, do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's warp time. Cam, I kind of love that as Captain Freeman's go-to like saying. Like instead of engage or make it so, or as Janeway would say, do it. I love Captain Freeman. It's warp time.
I love that whole intro with the little glowing ball going around the ship because that is so TOS. I mean, we saw it as well in TNG on the episode The Child, for example. But you go back to like Day of the Dove, and that was a scenario that happened on the original series. But also when it, you know, went in, I don't know, into Captain Freeman or whatever, it reminded me of the spore landing on Tilly's shoulder.
I thought so too. So are they setting this up for like episode 3 or 4? Is that like kind of energy, that transdimensional entity going to come back after it floated into her?
Well, if it doesn't, that was a very weird punchline.
Yeah. I wasn't like chuckling that hard after I saw that moment. But Cam, if a transdimensional entity came to you and said he could create anything in the world, would you go with a purple striped tricorder?
Wouldn't be on my top 10. I have to say that.
What would be on maybe your top 3?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, do I live in a Star Trek world where currency is irrelevant?
Well, you can use Gold Press Latinum, right?
Yeah, I guess I could. Like, if I live in a Star Trek world, I don't really need it. But if I live in this world, then I would probably go for the currency, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Do you know what I would wish for?
What?
More wishes.
That never works. Haven't you seen Leprechaun?
Actually, I have. It was amazing in that, it was like an Easter trip where all my cousins came to visit us, and my youngest brother was like 4 or 5, and Leprechaun was on TBS, and we're all watching it because Jennifer Aniston was in it, and it was way too scary for my 4-year-old brother. But what I kept doing though is I kept aping that scene from Wayne's World, and I go up to my brother all the time and go, "I'm the leprechaun." And to this day, he doesn't think it's funny. He does not think it's funny. It's just like it was traumatizing for him at the time.
Well, to be fair, Leprechaun wasn't funny either, even when it was trying to be.
Cam, just next time you see Bretty, just go up to him and go, "I'm the leprechaun," and see what kind of reaction you get out of him.
And we'll have to trick him into coming to a Leprechaun Film Festival where we'll show all like 8 of them.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Like, it's a 24-hour film festival. So we watch them on a loop as well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it does have a Star Trek convention, Cam, and you can speak to it because you actually watched the one with the Star Trek connection.
That's right. Anthony Montgomery shows up in Leprechaun Back to the Hood, I think it was. Yeah.
Did you ask him about that at the Seattle convention a couple years ago?
No, I didn't, because I don't think he took questions at that panel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was an interesting panel.
Yes, it was. I would ask him if I had a one-on-one panel, because I think he'd probably have some funny stories about working with Warwick Davis or something, but no, I haven't gotten to yet.
I like how you would only ask him if you got a one-on-one panel with Anthony Montgomery at a Star Trek convention. I don't know if you've got that juice, but I'd love to see you convince the organizers.
One-on-one panel. I mean a one-person panel.
Okay. No one else in the audience. Just Cam sitting in the audience with a microphone. Montgomery's up on stage, and that's it for 45 minutes.
Tyler, that was like our panel when we went up against Patrick Stewart.
There is actually video footage of our friend showing us up on stage, and then he pans to the crowd, and there's like no one there but our other friends. It was that was pretty brutal that one year.
Yes, it was. You know, turns out we aren't big enough yet to compete with Patrick Stewart.
Hey, last year we did better than we had any other year. So the trick is go on a Thursday morning. Like, that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
So back to the show, though. One of the moments that I did, like, just Tendi and Mariner hanging out watching, like, YouTube videos of admirals looking like doofuses that have gone viral. Like, I just, I that still has to be a thing, you know, even, like, 400 years from now. I buy that.
I think so, too, because if you watch the TNG episode Lower Decks, there's not, like, this glowing reverence for a lot of these senior staff members. I think you would still be amused by maybe a jerk admiral you'd met along the way looking like a fool.
Do you think that they missed the opportunity for a Barry Jenner memorial in which they gave a shout out to one Admiral Bill Ross in that moment?
Hmm. Is he the one you'd go to? I feel like there's other ones that you might be more inspired to make fun of. Like, I don't know. Maybe because she went head to head with like Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, so many times that people might have that sort of animosity to that character. But I think Nechayev is too strong a character. Like, it's too solid a character.
Cam, I know who. It's the one that we make fun of more often than not. Admiral Todman.
Yeah, Admiral Todman would be good. Even Admiral Paris to a certain degree.
Oh, okay, that would be fun. That would be fun.
Yeah. If you throw in Admiral Paris, I think the name value is maybe grabs fans too.
Do you think a lot of people would just think like, wow, Tom got promoted really quickly after returning home to Earth?
Maybe.
Yeah. Speaking of Voyager, Cam, what is the Janeway protocol?
Well, okay. I was trying to remember. Didn't they establish on Voyager the Janeway maneuver?
It's not ringing a bell.
Yeah. Like, I know there's the Picard maneuver.
Yeah.
But I seem to recall a vague mention of a Janeway maneuver, but maybe I'm 100% wrong on that, and that's just something fans have thrown out there. I can't recall. I've only gone through Voyager once all the way through, so my memory is failing me on that one. But I would love to know what the Janeway protocol is.
Well, based on what we know of her, I would have to assume it's messing with the timeline somehow.
That would make a lot of sense. And I want to say this scenario of him being put on the bridge with these training programs, I really enjoyed too. You asked me earlier about which of these Rutherford jobs I enjoyed. I thought this was a really, really strong one too, because you and I have joked, for example, when we talked about that Wesley episode where he goes to the like cadet testing, is put in like a burning building. And we've seen also in Ask Not the Short Trek, the training that Anson Mount's Captain Pike puts a trainee through. It's like ridiculously awful. And I love that now Lower Decks is kind of ridiculing that, where all you have to say is like one minor thing and boom, the whole ship explodes.
I also love that they kept putting children on the ship just so that he could kill them. That to me is kind of the punk rock aspect that I want them to do more of that kind of dark stuff, you know, even the reference to General Corinne taking a crap on his batleth. That kind of made me giggle as well. I'm a cheap laugh, as I established last week.
I did like Commander Ransom too, being like, now with more children.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Who do you think fares better in these command hologram sorts of procedures? One Rutherford or one Commander Troy?
Boy, I feel like Troy didn't kill as many children as Rutherford did, virtual children.
Certainly failed more than once, though.
Yeah, she did. She did. Although that wasn't played for laughs, the way that the Rutherford one is.
Well, when I saw her order Geordi to his death, and I saw the look on his face, I got laughs out of that myself.
Was that funnier than the Rutherford scenario?
I got more, a visceral laugh out of the Rutherford scenario. It's only like funny in retrospect for me as I think about Geordi's blank stare as Troy orders him to his death on the holodeck. That was quite amusing.
I wonder though, you know, a lot of the Star Trek tropes and situations that we've seen on TNG and Voyager especially,
can we call them star tropes moving forward?
Sure.
Star tropes, okay.
Why not? But all of the star tropes on those shows in particular, which I think is what Lower Decks is drawing a lot on, especially TNG, the show TNG has a certain stiffness to it. It takes itself quite seriously, so that there's a reason fans have been kind of ridiculing aspects of TNG, lovingly ridiculing, but various aspects of TNG over the years, whether it be some of the Riker stuff, some of the Worf getting shot down stuff, some of the Picard moments. Is it tough to like make fun of that sort of situation on TNG when it already is kind of funny just by how serious it is?
Like, fans have almost usurped the Lower Decks writers with a lot of that.
Right, like they've taken the edge away because people have been doing this for so long.
Well, then I honestly think, go back to Mike McMahon's like Twitter account that essentially got him this job, in which he called it, you know, Star Trek: The Next Generation Season 8. These are like three or four lines that he gives as a description for every episode. They're hilarious, though. I still think there's room for them to figure out, okay, what have the fans not seized upon within the Star Trek canon that we can kind of have fun with? So I just say it's a good challenge for these writers to take on for themselves.
I mean, I'm definitely enjoying what they're doing, so I'm not saying they can't pull it off, because I think they've had, so far, they've definitely delivering what I would hope they would. I'm just curious, though, if, like, for a new viewer, and I think we do have to kind of question, like, who is this show kind of for? Because fans, I think, are going to get the references and the jokes and the situations. I am curious how viewers not familiar with Star Trek would respond to this show.
Yeah, no, well, how many people not familiar with Star Trek are tuning in, though? And I mean that sincerely.
Right, well, especially on CBS All Access. If this is airing just on broadcast TV, people might just flip across it. But on CBS All Access, I don't know.
Yeah. Cam, I, just as we were speaking, I did pull up one of the Star Trek Season 8 tweets, just for those that aren't familiar. Here's a great one that I like here. Picard must debate a sentient mountain to distract it while he and Riker climb to safety. Geordi's new girlfriend despises Data. That to me is awesome, though. It's so simple, but like I could literally watch like an episode of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's that absurdist take on Star Trek that I'm going to enjoy going forward, because I think he has quirky ideas that it's not, as we said, it's not just relying on making fun of the tropes, which a lot of the tropes have been made fun of for many years now. Yeah. And that goes all the way back to the original series as well. Comedians have been doing acts on the whole Shatner, you know, Star Trek world, like beginning in 1970, basically. So that's nothing new, but I am appreciating the absurdist take they're, you know, tackling the show with, because you look, we talked about it earlier, the way they did the Ferengi in this episode, where we get the TNG era, and then we kind of get the richer Star Trek ideal of what a Ferengi could be. And we saw that, you know, pop up quite a few places in the way they've approached the show.
Are we still due for a live action Ferengi in Discovery or Star Trek Picard coming up?
I think that has to happen soon, right?
I'm bummed out that we haven't gotten, like, just because, like, the Ferengi are one of the coolest looking Star Trek aliens, period. And I just wish that they get that, like, a bit of a makeup update. I'm not saying, like, update them the way that they did the Klingons on Discovery, but I would just love to see that much richer sort of makeup job, you know, just as we've seen makeup technologies and practices improve drastically over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and I appreciated that they stuck with the classic looks of the Klingons and the Ferengi, for example, because a lot of discussion, you know, you and I were having was, what would they do going into, say, Picard or another series set, you know, around that kind of timeline in a world where Discovery has revised so much of what, say, Klingons look like?
And we did get confirmation here in Lower Decks that's, well, around this area at least, they do look like, you know, the Klingons that we're familiar with.
Right, yeah. So I'm hoping that that is the template going forward, and that if and when Picard does introduce Klingons, we can get, as you said, some updated makeup, but stick to the look that we are familiar with.
I just want Michael Dorn to show up in Discovery makeup and nobody comment on it at all. Especially you fans out there. I want to go over the head of all of the fans, you know, like, oh yeah. Oh, I guess that's just 4K for you.
I have a question for you. They have teased that, you know, legacy characters will come in. Who do you think is going to be the first, you know, one or two legacy characters they would be looking to incorporate into the show?
Well, I think Quark just lends himself so well, you know, and I don't think it's necessarily going to interfere with any sort of continuity. Like, it's not as if Quark is suddenly going to become like the next Grand Nagus or anything like that. We know that that's Rom's job. Whereas if they introduce other characters, I wonder if things can get tricky if they're establishing that in this particular year, which I believe is 2380, you know, like B'Elanna is the captain aboard X vessel, whereas maybe they want to use reference to that character in Star Trek Picard, and it just doesn't make sense. Or I don't know. Like I feel that Quark would be the least problematic character to reintroduce. What about you?
Quark is a really solid pick. I'm hoping that we get to visit characters who would be unlikely to pop up in an arc on Picard. Like, hey, I like Janeway a lot, but I think there's a good chance you might see Janeway pop up on Picard. Yes. And same goes for, you know, Worf probably. So I'm hoping that maybe we get, like, Barclay shows up on Lower Decks, or bring in, you know, obviously...
he's still a lieutenant junior grade.
Quark's a great one. I would like to see some of the characters from DS9 or Voyager that have almost zero chance of showing up in one of these spinoffs.
Well, like a Grand Nagus Rom, for example, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, bring in Rom. Bring in Harry Kim. Like, I don't know that they're going to be bringing, you know, Garrett Wong in for a Picard episode. I have my doubts. And so, like, let's revisit those characters in Lower Decks where you just have to, you know, get their voice. You don't have to deal with writing them an arc or anything like that. You can just have fun with the characters.
What about Q's son?
John Delancey's son?
Keegan Delancey, who now works for the U.S. State Department. And I say that because John Delancey told us that at a Star Trek convention a couple years ago.
I would love it if that was just your fan fiction.
Maybe it is, Cam. Yeah. Maybe John Delancey never did say that.
Yeah. That one might be a stretch.
You don't think that they're drooling over Q2?
But I think John Delancey could be really fun. I mean, maybe that one is unrealistic because that's a character they would put into Picard. So maybe, John Delancey's fine. But I do think it would be fun to throw Q into Lower Decks because John Delancey has such a dry wit that I think it would actually translate really well to animation.
My favorite John Delancey moment, though, is when we're at the Seattle convention and this woman goes up to the mic and says, "Can I have a hug?" And he just says, "No." I was like, that was pretty awesome.
And you and I applauded.
No, then I went up to the mic and asked for a hug, and he said, "Yes."
And then you were like, "Your son works for the State Department."
He's and like, "I have no idea what you're talking about."
Gertie.
Wait, Cam, are we getting more belly laughs talking to each other than we got from tonight's Lower Decks?
It's quite possible.
But I did love it. Here, like another comedic moment that worked for me, and it actually comes down to the directing. Like, I don't think enough props is given to the directing of animated stuff. The moment where Boimler says that, "Hey, I'm going to go down to this exotic planet, and you're going to be stuck here." And we cut to Mariner saying, "Doesn't get more exotic than this." The directing of that was just on point. This tiny little rattle in the backgrounds. They didn't have to have this lame canister fall over. They just went with subtlety. And I think the subtlety aspect of that, that moment worked for me, especially I've watched the episode twice, and it was the second time that it really did grab me as a good, solid comedy moment.
Well, it was a really fun reveal and staged very well. I thought also staged well was, they kind of have their bonding moment on the planet where, "I will never tell anyone about this ever." Smash cut to the lounge, whatever it's called. And he's ridiculing her to all of the other Starfleet members there.
And he thought it was a bullion.
I thought that was a really funny reveal as well. Fast cut to that situation, I thought was played very well.
The one moment I wish that they did pull back on, though, is that if Mariner never commented on the fact that Boimler is walking around in his dress uniform, if they just let that be the joke where he thinks he's on an important mission and we just see him walking around in his dress uniform for no reason.
It actually would have been really funny if they'd surrounded him with other Starfleet that were basically in the equivalent of some sort of grub attire.
Yeah. Well, we did see that kind of grub attire do you remember? Okay, they had these weird kind of engineer uniforms on TNG where they're almost these kind of gold jumpsuits. Do you recall those?
Not off the top of my memory, no.
They were featured sporadically, but it was just you'd have kind of they're presumably more kind of the enlisted guys wearing these big gold jumpsuits. And that was kind of what I always interpreted as the grub attire.
Right. It definitely sort of exists in different forms, but usually it's more they beam down to a planet, they have some sort of attire that matches the climate of the planet. And I would say that kind of fits the purpose. It just doesn't have the same grubby utilitarian look that I'm imagining in this comedy scenario.
Or what about, remember the season 7 premiere of Deep Space Nine, where they go to the desert planet in search of Sarah Sisko's sort of vision, and they all have kind of these desert headgear that they're wearing, as if, that you would commonly see from people in the Middle East. That was kind of sort of stuff that maybe you're talking about.
Yeah, that definitely applies. I was also thinking, say, in Enterprise, when they go down to the desert, they'll have their special jumpsuits they're wearing.
I do give props for maybe just the budget that Enterprise had and that they were able to kind of get the costume department to make those. Because, in the TNG era, they were not investing any sort of money to give them desert fatigues or anything like that for their uniforms.
It doesn't make a lot of sense how, say, on TNG, they'll send them down to a diplomatic mission wearing their normal uniforms and then also send them to one where they're crawling through caves wearing the exact same outfits.
Speaking of crappy missions, though, I do love the fact that you just have Rutherford he loves being in the Jeffries tubes for like days on end, you know, like just look at him, that glance that he gave to the Jeffries tube at the end where you see that it's sparkling, you know, that's where he wants to be. Like he's in his element there.
Well, I like that. And this is a tact I didn't think they would necessarily take. When the characters on Lower Decks were presented, I thought a lot of it would be them complaining about their crappy assignments. And I love that we have a character who actively loves their crappy assignment. In fact, a couple of them.
He's bragging that his blisters have blisters.
Exactly, yeah. And so I do love that that sort of twist, and that I really did think it would be a lot of characters just like, oh, isn't this the worst? Which is a joke that would, I think, get old.
Yeah. Another thing that I do want to mention, just kind of references to other series. We did touch on that with the Janeway Protocol, but they also mentioned how Castro was on the Enterprise for just a hot minute there. Are these references good, though? Like, is it just fan service for the sake of it at this point? Like, I wish if they're going to make those references, there'd be a little bit more weight to it.
Right, or that the joke is just funnier.
Exactly. Yes. I just feel as if they're just saying it just to say it, like, because they know that most people at home will be like, whoa, they mentioned the Enterprise.
Right. I mean, the Section 31 joke about the speed walking was a little funny. Like, it wasn't bad.
I did like it, but Boimler's just like, they speed walk in Section 31.
That one I thought worked. Like, I can't say it was a guffaw, but I thought it was a cute little joke. And you know, I did like the one last week, the reference to Gary Mitchell. So that worked because a character bringing it up and someone else being like, who? So I thought that worked, that aspect of it. But in this one, I'm trying to think, you had the Janeway scenario. I'm trying to think of any, you had the smorgasbord. I thought that was pretty clever.
Mm-hmm.
Just that term for that training program. I think the most clever reference was probably the Ferengi.
Is it a reference, or is it just like working within, you know, the parameters of the universe? Because they also like said, you know, oh, I thought that was a bullion, but I would just say it's like, hey, we have access to this universe. Let's, you know, make good with it.
I think when you're saying it was doing it, that thing with its hands, that's more of a reference.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the greedy hand motion. Well, yeah. That is 100% like a Lost Outpost sort of.
It is.
Vestigial trait, of course, yeah.
It's a very specific reference, but it's also tied to the characters being observant. So that actually, I think, makes it work really well as a reference because they're actually interacting with what the reference is versus just tossing off a line, you know, which is very easy to do.
Yeah. Cam, maybe there's a little bit of like Star Trek news this past week that we can discuss, but before we get there, just any final thoughts on episode 2, or maybe let me throw you this question. Who's your favorite character so far, only 48 minutes into the series?
I would say Boimler so far is the one that I'm really enjoying, because I like the way this character just really gets frazzled a lot. I find that very funny. So I can see a lot of scenarios where this character can be made kind of the butt of a joke, but is also a character that I find endearing to watch.
Okay. I'm still digging Mariner. Like, I think, mm-hmm. like I said before, I think she's the most layered character at this moment. I see more of an opportunity for her to grow as a character than maybe some of the others. But I think the show will get old if we're seeing the Lower Decks as just green this entire time. I think we need to get them to the point, maybe, I don't know, 5 years down the road, where they're ready to get their promotions into the upper ranks as well.
Right. I will say I'm really interested in spending more time with the senior staff. Obviously, it's only episode 2, so that's not necessary at this point. But like, I really want to spend more time with Dr. Ta'ana, because, I mean, it's a Cajun. I just want to like do more with the Cajun species, because they're ones that only really work in animation, and we're only going to get so many opportunities to explore a character like that.
Do you think maybe they could try a Cajun like in live action on Discovery or Picard?
I mean, I think they could now. I just hope it doesn't look embarrassing like the cat alien from Star Trek V.
Right. Or the cats as featured in 2019's movie Cats.
I want it to look exactly like that.
Cam, True or false, for the listeners, would if they released Funko Pop versions of Cats from the movie Cats, would you buy one as a joke?
I wouldn't, but I think other people might. That was the argument you and I were having off the air about whether people would buy these ironically if they put out pops based on Cats. I think some people would.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, you and I went and saw Cats and were bored mostly out of our minds, right?
It wasn't like, I wish it was one of those movies that it was so bad it's good, but the movie was boring. It was just like all it was cats singing about being a cat. Like, we didn't understand anything that was going on. There was absolutely no plot.
Yeah. And so the thing is, though, you and I were kind of bored, but I know a lot of people that actually thought it was hilarious to endure.
Really?
Yeah, I've actually met friends. In fact, former guest on the show, Tony G, who has shown up on a few episodes here and there. He did, I think, Nemesis, Voyage Home, and a few others. He thought it was an absolute blast. So there's a case of someone that really enjoyed it. So they are out there.
I'm being sincere. Was Tony possibly under the influence?
He did do an episode of the podcast for us called Star Trek Under the Influence. So I'll let you draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
I did have one other point I want to bring up. Maybe a couple, actually, just briefly.
Sure, yeah.
Is this show missing out on fun titles? Because so far we've had Second Contact and Envoys. I mean, when you look at the original animated series, you had episodes called The Magics of Megas 2, The Infinite Vulcan, Pirates of Orion. You get to really have these goofy, colorful titles. Should Lower Decks be following suit?
Cam, I don't think you're on Urban Dictionary enough, but just go look up Second Contact. NSFW. That's all I'm saying, man.
Oh, wow. I'm behind the times.
Same with Envoys. Yeah. Use your imagination, people.
I'm hoping we get some fun classic Star Trek titles, though, from a little more of that TOS mode. The second point, it was actually an interesting review I read online, and something that I think you and I were edging close to maybe wrapping our heads around, but didn't quite cross the line into understanding it. But I saw some negative reviews from viewers who are English second language, talking about how difficult this show is to follow because the characters are talking so fast.
Oh.
And that was something I had not thought of, because I went to IMDb. I was just interested in reading reviews on episodes, and a lot of them are crap. A lot of them are the quote-unquote, this isn't Star Trek, which ignore those. But I came across a couple like this, and it gave me pause because I thought, oh, like, that's not good.
I'll only say this, though. Historically, Star Trek has been far more popular in English-speaking countries, regardless. But it also is a slower-paced show, which does lend itself for, like, we commented on how fast-paced that first episode is. I think they did slow it down a notch in this one. Mm-hmm. I think there is hope. But the other thing is, we know, is like comedy, it doesn't really translate so well internationally either. I wonder if that might be a sticking point for some international viewers too.
I am very curious about that going forward. Right now, we don't have a fantastic grasp on international because they haven't set up international markets yet. Because of the juggled release date for Lower Decks. So that will be interesting once more of the world sees this show.
Yeah, yeah. One point I'd like to bring up, we got a much better view of main engineering in this one. I like the design. That warp core, massive. The only little sticking point, it seems a little dark in there compared to the other main engineers. Although, I know the one on the Enterprise D did seem dark at times as well.
It did. I thought this one was pretty cool looking, though.
Yeah. Oh, did you notice Mariner? She likes to kick up her boots a lot. There is like kind of like cool designs on the bottom of her soles there. So they have like the Starfleet Delta. It's just like one of those nice little kind of things that they'll put the time and effort into, you know, Lower Decks. They would not have done so in, say, the animated series, you know, like 45 years ago.
Right. And I mean, people can complain about the Kurtzman approach to Star Trek, but you've got to give them a lot of points for their design. You know, you look at the way the designs were for the Discovery uniforms and a lot of the Picard stuff as well. And you see that extending onto Lower Decks with details like that.
Yeah. Any final thoughts? Just a little bit of news that we can chat about?
Yeah, overall, I just thought this was an enjoyable episode. I'm hoping that next time we can merge kind of the laughs from episode one with the storytelling of episode two and get a really great episode three.
Yeah. So yeah, a little bit of news coming from an interview that Alex Kurtzman did. I want to make sure I'm getting this right. Yeah, he did an interview with Gold Derby discussing Emmy nominations for Star Trek Picard and Short Treks. I guess we should mention that those series were recognized in technical categories as well. He did confirm that, there's still more interest in Short Treks. Did not give a timeline for when we would see more of them. But the gist of it was, if they're getting Emmy nominations, why would we cancel them at this point? The other thing that he did bring up, though, is that they have had a lot of time to work on the scripts for series like Discovery, Picard, and the Pike spinoff, Strange New Worlds. And then he threw in this little nugget. At the very end of the sentence, he said, and Section 31, which there's been no mention of Section 31 like for a long time. You and I have discussed how little interest we have in a Section 31 spinoff. At least Boimler mentioned that there was Section 31 was into speedwalking. So you got that though.
That's true. I was always under the assumption that Section 31 would air about the same time as Star Trek Shakar.
Okay, yeah. What would you be more excited for? Shakar Trek or Section 31?
That's a very easy question. Shakar. If they made a Star Trek Shakar, I would be so blown away. I would be counting the minutes to that premiere because I'd be like, have they lost their minds? I need to see this show.
Is every episode about him pining over Kira?
No, they save that episode for the finale.
Okay.
You got to go out strong.
Yeah. Sorry. I totally forgot to mention this. One other moment, and it's so stupid, but like the shuttle that they're traveling in on Lower Decks, though, it was the Yosemite, which it was great timing because just in the last little while, we had Donald Trump refer to Yosemite Park as Yosemite, which seeing that shuttle, it got an easy laugh out of me, but for reasons unrelated to the efforts from the fine writers of the show.
Right. So getting back to the Section 31 thing.
Yeah.
When we think about the production schedule coming up, obviously a lot is very up in the air because of COVID, but I would guess they're going to roll onto Picard season 2 next, and then probably Strange New Worlds. So, like, when do you even think a Section 31 would be airing?
I think it would be after Discovery Season 4.
Like, yeah.
Honestly. And what would that be? Like, are we talking about, like, 2023?
Maybe. Could be even 24.
Yeah. There's no appetite for this.
And especially in 2024.
Yeah. Like, we love Mira Giorgio. We think she's a great character. Do I want to... That doesn't mean she should be the lead of a series, especially one that would more likely than not feature one of the biggest duds of this new era of Star Trek, which is Ash Tyler.
Do you think this show is like a prequel?
Like one with like non-Mira Giorgio, like Prime Giorgio perhaps, as like, before her captain days... It's her going. Leland is featured quite prominently because they're rivals or something.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to come up with a slant on this show that is in any way interesting, and that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, I guess so. But the thing is, like, I like Mira Giorgio because she's arch. I didn't like her when she was the villain. You know, yeah. I liked her as kind of the anti-hero, and I. So that would be an interesting thing for them to pursue, but I don't know. You and I don't care about this show at all.
No, and I'm very curious by 2023 or whenever they could even get production going on this one, what the appetite is like at that point, and who knows what comes out of, the periphery somewhere that inspires them to come up with another spinoff that people are super excited for. Like, who knows, right?
No, I think it's obviously going to be the... General Corinne spinoff, he's just drunk all the time,
I mean, we could even see with, say, Janeway shows up in Picard season 2 And suddenly there's a huge appetite for some sort of Janeway short series. Like, who knows, right? Anything could happen.
Well, you and I, we were kind of thinking that what we'd be getting, though, is a Seven of Nine spinoff. But then I still think it's like a pretty good idea. Like, even though we weren't fans of Picard season one, I think throwing her into the mix as part of, you know, the main cast of season two, presumably it's not confirmed. I think that's actually maybe like a great use of her, though. It takes less of a burden off of her shoulders as well. And it's not CBS just saying like, let's just grab like well-known characters from 20 to 30 years ago and just give them their own spinoffs, like a Captain Worf, for example.
Right. I think the 7-1 would have made sense as a series, though, just because of the whole Fenris Rangers thing.
Yeah.
That's something. But I'm happy with her on Picard. I don't need another spinoff. But I am curious just if going forward, you know, I don't know that when they were coming up with the notion of adding Pike at the end of season one Discovery, that they realized there would be such a massive demand for a Pike spinoff starring Anson Mount. Because Anson Mount wasn't even cast at that point. Like, who knows what season two of Picard could bring or season three of Discovery.
I just wonder how much of it is if people were drawn into more of that optimistic, you know, do-good sort of character. Like, that's what they'd kind of been missing from Discovery season one. You know, after he just stands in such stark contrast to, say, a Lorca, right?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Definitely going to be curious. And I mean, I guess it's just a matter of time until they run out of ideas and Shakar gets his series.
Shakar Trek, man.
That's right. Okay.
There's no colon. It's just called Shakar Trek.
Okay. So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, I guess next week we're doing episode 3 of Lower Decks.
Yeah, that's true. That episode is titled Temporal Edict. So not so much with the clever titles, although, you know what, Cam, I just looked it up on Urban Dictionary. Hoo boy, Temporal Edict. racy.
Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Violent Board Combat, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R. R is in rectal insectoids, E-P-O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.